Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 123, recorded November 30th, 2011. I have a Google. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ford, featuring available Sync with My Ford Touch. Sync with My Ford Touch gets you to your destination with integrated turn-by-turn directions and directional arrows displayed on screen. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. It's time for TWiG This Week in Google, the show that focuses on Google, but not just Google, the cloud, Facebook, Twitter. And today, a little bit of Spotify, too. To my left, Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org, founder of Lifehacker. She's also responsible for ThinkUp app. ThinkUpApp.com. Hey, Gina.
How's it going?
It's good. Are you in a new office, or are you just we're a different angle?
I rearranged a little bit.
You've moved the bikes.
I moved the bikes, and you can see my TWiT Fez is in the far corner there. So I had to get that in the shot.
Oh, we're trying to figure out. I'm actually very disappointed. We sent all the hosts, including Jeff and Gina, Fez's last year for Christmas. And we wanted to send you something equally exciting. So we were going to get monogrammed lab coats that would say, like, Gina Trapani This Week in Google and have the TWiT logo. But then, first of all, they can't get them until after January. And second of all, it's like, I know we'll spend a lot of money on these and you'll just put them in the closet. Nobody's going to wear a lab coat with their name and a TWiT logo on it. That's impractical. So
I wear my Fez every day.
Yeah. Yeah. You look good in a Fez, though.
I like it. You should consider
it.
Next
time you go to Turkey. Oh, no, you can't wear it in Turkey. Ataturk made that impossible. Hey, on our far left here, Jeff Jarvis, who's visiting us from Blermany.
I'm trying to.
Which explains the look. He's actually in a...
I know. Do you want to...
No, you're fine. Don't worry about it. We love you. What are you doing in Germany?
I was speaking at an event today by the committee about the internet and all that, and then I had dinner tonight with some little party about the internet and all that. So that's why I wore the tie, because my mother insisted.
He's had a very fancy meal with secretaries, ministers,
four members of parliament, and.
Jeff, it's not going to work. We're going to have to let you go. I'm glad we could see you.
And
I'm glad how you look so good, but
hotel.
He's still answering the last question. he's in another time zone.
I know.
He's in the Skype zone. Sorry.
Do you want to try me on audio link?
I think we're just going to let you go. In fact, we didn't even have to. It happened all by itself. That's all right. We're going to bring in somebody in that slot. No problem. We've got somebody exciting to join us in a bit. But let's say hi, first of all, to the hirsute Mr. Movember, the last day. Why did you choose that particular look, Mr. Matt Cutts of Google?
Yeah, they call it the trucker, you know, and I could have gone for the Hulk Hogan if I'd gotten just a little more off. But this was easy, and I've noticed people are very quick to get out of my way at the airport, so I can really make fast progress.
So Movember is a yearly event now, which has become quite popular, started by some Aussies, I believe. It was to sell, to raise money and raise awareness of prostate cancer, I think, right?
Yeah, and men's health issues in
men's health in general. Actually, Jeff, who is a prostate cancer survivor, would be a good person to have on here, but unfortunately he's gone. He's always had a Movember all year round. Are you going to keep yours? This is the last day.
It's probably my last day. My wife is a little anxious to get rid of it. You know, unless someone wants to start donating for me to keep it, I'll probably start shaving it off.
Do you raise money by doing this?
Yeah. In fact, on my lower third, I did a little thing where if you go to bit.ly/twigmat, you can donate to my team. We've got a Microsoft versus Google competition going on.
Well, that's going to help. I think there's quite a few people now who will rush over there. And I didn't say who, but you pick the one you like best. I think this is great. US.Movember.com is the site for the US.Movember.com worldwide. It is the last day, but next year you could do it. I did it once. I did it last year. I started it, and I couldn't do it. It was just too scratchy.
My dad wrote after 4 days and said, I remember why I don't grow a mustache now.
He's so. Totally village peopled it.
He is village peopled it. Yeah. Our small children like, Daddy, a strange man tried to talk to me.
not too much, but my cat loves it because she thinks I'm another cat now, so I can rub up against her and everything's good.
Hey, that sounds like Jeff. Are we going to be on phone with you, Jeff?
I'm still on audio. If this works,
this works fine. This works much better. Thank you.
Okay.
And it does mean that we have room, in the third spot for Dylan. So thank you for doing that. Dylan Combs is with Google. He is... Say again?
Give my face
Casey,
for
I'm
Dylan.
Sorry. Dylan Combs is somebody else.
I said I give up my face for Dylan.
Yes. Right. So you talk, Dylan, when Jeff talks, and we'll think it's him. No Dylan problem. Casey is a product manager at Google who is doing God's work. He's replacing the Google bar.
No, we've replaced the black navigation bar with the new Google bar.
Well, now I still have. I'm looking at my Google.
That's right. Well, it's going to take us a little while to roll it out. But if you look at the Google blog post that went up yesterday, you'll get some screenshots and see the actual video that will show you what it looks like.
Why was this in response to something or just what happened?
Well, this is just the next step in a series of steps that we've been taking most recently to really clean up the overall user experience across Google. And the significance of the Google bar is that it really glues together all of the different products that users are already using cleans up the interface and really makes it a more seamless experience. And so the goal is really to make Google one experience as opposed to a whole bunch of siloed experiences. And the goal here is that the Google bar is going to really enable easier navigation and just kind of help the user understand what it is to use Google.
So this is the bar that we're all familiar with right now. And actually, I don't mind it. I like the integration. I like the fact that it goes across Google products and I have direct access to my Google Plus and Gmail. And of course, encourages people to live in the Google ecosystem. You did maybe one big fix already, which is to change the notification for those of us who get a lot of notifications from 9 plus to whatever the actual number is. But now we're going to get look at this. So Google will have all the apps will be under the Google logo.
Yeah, so we're calling it the Google menu or the Google menu, which is essentially showing you all of the apps that you can access. Mm-hmm. And really, like I said, making it easier to access the products that are important to the user. We also gained a little bit of screen real estate by eliminating the black Google navigation bar at the top.
Interesting.
And it's going to have a more seamless look across all of the different Google properties, which is something that we've always struggled with as we develop and launch new products.
Were there complaints about the Google bar?
No, I don't think this is, it's not like everybody was complaining and we said, oh, we need to make some big fixes. This is really just part of a long-term vision. And how product how the overall experience is just evolving. So this is just the next step in that process. And what we do is we pay particular attention to feedback from users both internally and externally. And we do lots of usability tests. And we try to really understand what works and what doesn't work. And then we essentially take all of that information and put it together as part of the development process to continue to push the envelope in terms of how we develop the products.
Yeah, but...
Go ahead, Leo. Sorry.
I mean, you did just roll out the black bar like a couple of months ago, right? When you rolled out Google Plus. So the presumption is somebody at that point thought this was the way to do it, and now you're doing it differently.
Well, I mean, we release often and early, and we iterate quickly. That's right. the kind of mantra of Google. And so this is just an illustration of that process in effect.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's not a bad thing to back off on it. I did wear my black shirt in honor of the black bar, which is which is gone. I'm sorry, Gina. You wanted to ask something?
Oh, I had a question. So it's when you roll over the logo, the menu reveals itself, so you don't have to actually click to see the menu.
you can click on it or roll over it and it'll open. So we basically have two ways to activate the Google menu.
Okay. You know, what struck me about it when I first saw it was, wow, you know, this thing is tall compared to the thin black strip.
It's a bigger Google.
Google bar looks taller, and that's because the Google search box is in it, which isn't in the black bar and the Google logo. But then I watched the video, and seeing if you switch between Google products now, there's generally a search box and a Google logo at the top of the page anyway. So if you compare it from that gray area up, the new Google bar is actually shorter. But if you compare it to the black bar, it's much taller.
Well, that's right. We've actually moved the search box from the property or the product and moved it up into the Google bar, allowing more real estate for the product itself. So, for example, if you're in email or if you're in calendar, you know, you're going to see more of that specific product, and it's going to be taken up by less of the Google navigation bar that we had previously there.
What's the process in this kind of stuff? Does Google do focus groups? I mean, how do you test this stuff?
We just normally look for random people walking by campus and
try to come here.
We pull them in and we feed them some food and we force them. We put like toothpicks in their eyeballs and stuff like that. No, seriously, it's an art form and it's a scientific approach. I think Google is well known for having this process where we launch products internally. To all of the Google employees and force them to use the products.
Because eat your dog food. Eat your own dog food.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Eat your dog food. And this is really a great way to get honest, clear, and passionate feedback. But, you know, oftentimes we'll bring in groups. We'll do usability studies. We're very focused on metrics. We track all the clicks and try to understand if we're creating any types of, you know, cognitive or dissonance for the user as they open a page. You know, do they sit there and just stare at it? So there's a lot of different things that we apply in a very iterative process. So it's a little bit madness.
Now I still don't have it, so I'm working blind here. I've looked at the blog post, of course, but I'm not sure exactly how this is going to change for me. How is this going to roll out? Is everybody going to have it by a certain date?
Well, we're rolling it out slowly. It's just part of our launch process, but we hope that everybody should have it by next week.
Okay. Is it customizable? Can I change the menu items?
No. So right now it's a fixed set of Google properties, and we're going to roll it out to English only across all of our, all of our domains, and then quickly add languages after that. So we're, you know,
I still want to get a sense here
part of the process
of how you. Well, what was the process that said, "Hey, everybody, a black bar is a great idea," and then, as Gina says, only a short time later, the black bar. Was there complaints? Was there, what was the internal process? Was it? Eric's gone and Larry's in charge. I mean, I know you can't fully answer, but give us some signal here of how this process happened.
Well, you know, I think over the last, 6 to 12 months, we've been in a pretty significant moment in the evolution of Google as both a product and a company.
Absolutely the case. Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think we've become really focused. And part of the leadership that Larry has brought to Google is really helping us be very mindful about how we build the user experience. And I think what you're seeing is the illustration of that leadership from Larry and of course, a whole lot of people. But it's really... I can't say that there was like this very defining moment or like, oh my God, everybody realized that they hate the black sandbar or users hated the black sandbar. It was really just, it's really just this natural, very organic process by which we make changes. And I think what you're starting to see.
So that's, not, as they say on Family Feud, that's good answer. I'm still want to hear, is there some kind of principle that then came up that said, hey, everybody, here's the new rule, and let's make the bar fit that new rule. What's that new rule?
No, there's no new rule. I think what what you can see is that the overall design across Google is becoming more
unified.
Unified. Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Got it. Okay. All right.
And the Google bar itself is just a step in that overall process. Now,
we've seen this before. Other companies have done this before. Digbar, remember? And sometimes people push back against something like that. They say, I don't want this UI thing in every page of mine taking up space.
Well, and one thing to remember is that the dig bar, you know, would show that as you would go out to external places on the web. What I personally really like about the Google bar is you can tell from the video, when you click from property to property, you get a very consistent sort of experience. You know where the search box is going to be. Your mental model actually gets easier as you adjust.
I agree with you on that. That's good.
And if you can move the search box up, like everything on the Google page has to fight for its real estate in terms of being useful. And so, you know, trying to get back a little bit of that screen real estate is also really, really helpful because that leaves more room for your doc or your, you know, search session or whatever.
Yeah. You do say in your blog post, by the way, congratulations. You mentioned this on Google Plus that Larry Page blogged it, which must feel good when the boss blogs it. But you did say in your Google Plus and your original blog post, that this has been a year in the making.
Well, it's probably, for me personally, I've been involved in this project to various degrees for over a year. And so it was nice to kind of have that all come to a very specific crescendo with the launch of the Google Bar.
What was the mandate a year ago when you started this project? What were you told, this is what we want to do?
Well, I wasn't totally focused on just this one project. I had previously worked very closely with the search team and on the search team in building Google's real-time search.
We love that, by the way. Great job on that.
Thank you. And as we started to think about, you know, what the future was going to hold and the Google Plus project started to come to fruition, the teams and various people were starting to participate in that process. The Google Bar is a product that has existed for quite a while. If you recall many years ago, and I'm sure Matt has better details than I do around this, but we used to have tabs across the top of the search box. And then eventually we put that into a clear bar across the top. And I can't even remember what we called it at the time, but you know, that was really where we first started to try to figure out a way to help users navigate across Google and how to access products and how to find the other things just beyond search. So I think that the Google Bar, you know, has been in existence for much longer than the year that I referenced as being a participant in. And so it's been a really interesting experience to see how it's evolved from just a couple of links to something that's really dynamic and is going to create this kind of consistent user experience across all of Google.
Dylan, does the web interface design group talk with the Android design group? And I ask only because I know that in Ice Cream Sandwich, the menu button is getting deprecated in favor of drop-down menus that are contextual, kind of on in the action bar. So is that purposeful? Like, do the web interface folks talk with the Android folks, or is it just are they just two different things?
I don't know specifically if there's any correlation between those two things, but I wouldn't say that it's impossible that isn't happening. I'm sure that there's some sort of conversation happening between groups, but yeah, I can't comment specifically on that.
The new maps for Android does it too, right? 6.0 has the menu.
Has the menu at the top where you can tap. Yeah. I went to a, you know, Ice Cream Sandwich developer session. They said, you know, don't use the menu button as much, you know, use the action bar menus, and it's a drop down menu. Similarly, a few people that I saw on Twitter had commented that the new Google Bar menu drop down, because you can nest sub menus within it, it looks a lot like the Windows Start menu, just you know, upside down, which I don't know if that was purposeful or if that's even what a comparison you want to make. But
there's only so many ways you can do menus.
Yeah, that's true.
That okay.
True. But there's lots of room to add. I mean, it's future-proof, right? Like part of the idea was to make it so that Google launches new products. Right. You can add it to this menu without taking up real estate.
Yeah.
Right, from other things on the page.
Dylan, I know you can't stay with us much longer, but so I really want to thank you for being here.
Thank you.
There must be even one pixel change on Google's pages is we're talking massive numbers of hits, massive amounts of download. Do you feel a sense of a little pressure? I mean, this is unlike any other web page. When you change this web page, you're changing the experience of billions of people.
Yeah, I was thinking about that last night. You know, when I was leaving the office with a couple of my peers and thinking of all of the product launches that I've been involved with at Google over the last 8 years, and you know, doing some back of the envelope math, that the Google Bar is probably the largest launch that I've done in terms of the number of people that will see it and interact with it. And so it is pretty rewarding. And, you know, I think we take it for granted that, you know, we have the honor and the fortune to work at a company and on a product that really touches the lives of billions of people. And it's a pretty incredible and rewarding experience. And, you know, the best thing that we can do, I think our objective is to always do something that really helps other people and helps users. And you know, if we're able to do that and for a couple of people or for a billion, that's pretty rewarding.
Thank you, Dylan. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Dylan Casey, who is on Google Plus, of course, you can follow him there. He's a product manager at Google and responsible for the change in the Google toolbar at the top of all of Google's pages. Thank you, Dylan.
Thanks, Dylan.
Take care.
Okay.
Wow, very interesting.
It was great to have somebody from Google come in on a new product like that or a change like that on the news of the week. So good on you, Google. Besides Matt, we always love you. But.
Yeah, no, I there are very few companies that would do that. I think it's really great.
Yeah.
Face the music, as it were. Hope the music wasn't too tough.
And they've worked really hard. I mean, it'll be really nice to have it be streamlined and consistent across a lot of these different properties. So
I think the process is fascinating. It's just really interesting to imagine reconceptualizing this. And I respect Google given this very difficult position. There's so many companies that would this kind of iteration would not happen at this speed. It just wouldn't happen.
I think Larry helps with that, I think.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm sure it's a little bit of a roller coaster ride. Do you get to rest now, Dylan, or what's your next project?
No, we do not get to rest. I make very
Did
clear
Did you hear
to
that,
me.
Larry? He's not resting.
No.
Not a minute.
We have a lot of things that we want to get out very quickly. You know, part of the challenge around launching software at this scale is that you never get to get every feature that you want into the release. So
or that your users want.
that our users want. Yeah. So we're already planning some pretty significant releases, and we have a lot of work ahead of us. So we might sleep a little over the weekend, and that's about it.
Thank you, Dylan. We'll let you sleep now.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Dylan Casey, we really appreciate you joining us. Matt Cutts is also here, and it must be, you know, Matt's an early Google employee. You were in the first, 100?
Yeah.
So you've watched this process over a decade almost.
It's almost like punctuated equilibrium or evolution, you know, where sometimes you'll be moving really, really fast, and then sometimes you just really need to iterate and work on the polish and get the last little pixels, you know, where it's really smooth. So, you know, there's always some growing pains, people that want to move faster or some people that want to move slower. But it is pretty wild to watch how the UI people can iterate really quickly when it's called for.
You may have a hard time talking about this, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to. But it seems like things have changed a lot with Larry at the helm.
You know, he brings a really nice level of focus. You know, Larry's been very clear about some of the stuff that he believes in and trying to make sure that that we follow down the right path. And there were a lot of stuff that we were developing where, at least at the Google scale, it wasn't getting as much traction or it wasn't going to be as good of a match. Like, I love Google Health, for example. I send my wife Wee Things and my Fitbit
Sad
and all that.
Sad about that. Yep.
But at the same time, you know, if you want to really focus on a small number of things and do them really, really well, then you have to make some tough decisions.
You know, what's kind of fascinating about that is you would think from a distance that Eric would have been the one to say, no, that's stupid, let's stop that. And Larry would have been the one to say, oh, well, I like this project. And it's really interesting to me that Larry, and it's part of it, it's not just Eric, it's the triumvirate, but that Larry is bringing this laser focus. And I find that fascinating that he, in fact, is proving to be a mature manager. You don't have to say anything to that, Matt.
No, I think it's really helpful because Larry's been in the room. You know, he's gotten to see all the great stuff that Eric's done over the many years, and Eric has been a fantastic CEO. And so that leaves Larry having seen all of the stuff that Eric has done, and yet also he can bring his own, particular way of doing things and the things that he really cares about and make sure that those get addressed.
I think that it's a sign of maturity as well. And they say that Steve Jobs kind of mentored in some ways Larry Page. And that was one of the things Jobs was really good at, is laser focus. He came back to Apple and killed a lot of projects. And I wonder if this is a sign of maturity on Larry's part. As much as Larry would love all these hobby projects, the green initiatives, I know that was something Larry and Sergey loved. I'm sure Google Health, same thing. There is a maturity in a manager who says, you know, we love all this. Sometimes you have to kill your children and focus on a handful of good things.
From what I can tell, Larry is the quintessential engineer or nerd, and that, you know, inefficiency and waste, you know, is just so bothersome to him. So I think, you know, for him, I don't know, I'm just totally speculating, but I imagine starting a small company like Google, having such success and growing so monstrously big, and then, you know, coming to the helm, it's got to be really satisfying for him to say, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to trim all the fat, and we're going to focus, and we're going to make this product better. It makes a lot of sense. I think it's great that he's doing it. And I like the way that it's manifesting itself just in the little interface changes. And I think the fall clean out or the spring cleaning has also been really satisfying. I mean, there have been a couple of products I've been a little sad about.
Wave.
For the most part. Yeah. Well, yeah, that was another story. But for the most part, they've been really. It seems like things are going really well. So, good for him.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also very interesting. I mean, now we'll talk at a larger level. Google, which had a disparate number of products that were all over the place, there weren't really linked together necessarily. It looked like a company that had a lot of brilliant people all working somewhat in different directions, given full authority to do that. And there has been a tightening of the reins, not merely killing products, but also attempting to create an ecosystem. And that's the thing I think the toolbar is the most interesting part of the toolbar is. It's a really, again, the analogy to Apple and the Apple control of the entire ecosystem. It seems to me, for better or for worse, Google has decided we're going to create a unified ecosystem and keep trying to keep people in it. And you almost have to do that when you look at Facebook, the competition, which is doing that.
Isn't there a danger there, Leo? Go ahead.
Well, I think we also acknowledge we come from the open web, and we do best if the web does well. You know, some of these conversations about SOPA and related things, you know, it's important that the web do well. And so things like data liberation, yeah. Android being open source, Chrome being open source, I think in some sense you don't want a completely closed ecosystem, and I think Google knows that.
That would be nice to get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. We were talking on the show before this, Steve Gibbs was talking about Mozilla's browser ID initiative, and it's a single sign-on, kind of like OpenID. And while it's great to have a lot of different things, this is an example of you would like a single sign-on for everybody. Just let's all have one. Let's figure out which one we want. And sometimes the market's not the best choice. I mean, Facebook Connect is winning in the marketplace, but it isn't the best choice for all of us. And even if Google did something, there'd be some concern that, well, we don't want Google or Microsoft or Facebook to own this. It should be open. And so it's nice if you can get the balance of, hey, we do need to create a product that is that everybody can use, that's unified. There's some consistent UI, for instance, and still kind of keep it so there's not lock-in is the word I don't like, and that's the Apple word. We want lock-in.
But right,
and
Leo,
Facebook,
isn't that
to a large extent.
Say again, Gina, first and then Jeff.
And Apple and Facebook, this is why I have sort of this lurking distrust, right?
I mean,
Google has sold me that they're making, you know, Google's making a platform on top of the web, but there's a commitment to openness. And I'll sort of, there's lots of debates about what that all means. But that's why I feel more comfortable signing in with my Google account than I do connecting my Facebook account. So anyway, go ahead, Jeff.
I agree with both of you on that. I fear there could be a little danger, and the more unified Google becomes, the more Google's enemies say, see, they do everything. And the argument has always been that there's an alternative for everything, every one of those things that Google does. And I'm a little hypersensitive because I'm in Germany right now, where people tend to go a little...
It's the land land of the sea.
Exactly.
They're the ones waiting to pounce. I'll give you an example. Google's front page today, which, by the way, I love the Tom Sawyer. That is just awesome. I guess it's, what is it, Mark Twain's birthday or... Anyway.
Yeah, Mark Twain's 176.
Wow. Yes. But this, and this is something that you'll get, I'm sure, some pushback on. Right at the bottom, an ad, in effect, new Google Maps, indoors, interactive, start here. And Google's using the most popular front page on the web to promote a Google product. I don't see
a cool Google product.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that.
There's
and yet,
zero problem.
Yeah. How about Germany?
Well, the problem there is you can't win. Google can't win because it's anti. I'll be too strong and I'll get arrested tomorrow. it's anti-capitalistic and anti-American.
It's anti-corporate.
Yes, anti-corporate. Better said, Leo. Better said. And so, to that extent, you can't win. You might as well just do what you're going to do. And if you try to, it's like the complaint I have with Google is trying to be nice to newspapers. You can't win, so don't try.
They're never going to love you. Yeah.
No, but I do think that it's a challenge for Google. The more unified it becomes, the better the experience becomes, but the more monolithic it seems. And so some variation in the voice, the visual voice of Google is not a bad thing.
That's a good point. Just to put people at ease.
Yeah.
By the way, this is not the new Google front page.
Oh, no.
But it ought to be.
Okay, that's a good one.
For those of you listening at home, you'll just have to imagine. We're going to take a break. Matt Cutts is here. It's great to have Matt, Gina Trapani, and from Germany. And we've got him via audio, and you sound great. I'm really glad we could do this, Jeff Jarvis.
Whew.
Yeah, whew. We do not want to lose our Jarvis fix for the week.
I never want to miss Twig. It's my favorite part of the week.
And you're staying up late to do it. So it went well. You're breaking up. So let's say again what you were doing. You had dinner with ministers and, I mean, big shots.
I talked to a group today of basically from the Conservative Party about the internet and freedom and publicness and all that. And then I had dinner tonight with the Liberal Party people, four members of parliament, which is kind of a, that this strange American comes here and I get to do that. But it was fun.
Liberal and conservative in Germany don't mean the same thing they mean in the U.S., I'm sure.
No, they all hate us. Just joking, my friend.
We want to take a break, come back. We'll talk more about, I want to talk about this Spotify announcement. I think this is very interesting. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about Ford, also a great interest of mine. I was never a car guy, but when I got that 2010 Ford Mustang, I kind of fell in love with it. It's a great car to drive. I love the, the pep, the muscle car thing. But it's funny because for all the muscle, all of the, kind of toughness of the Mustang, I've got this great, super high-tech Ford Sync. And, I've talked about it like crazy. I love it. I mean, this is Siri 2 years ago where you talk to the car, you say what song you want to hear, who you want to call, what temperature should be, where's the nearest gas station. But I always forget this is also GPS, and it's the best GPS you can get. Now, if you have the Sync, their Sync will just talk to you. So you don't have the big console. It'll just tell you where to go. But if you have Sync with My Ford Touch, where you get the 7-inch screen in the center console, two screens behind the steering wheel, the whole idea for all of this is keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road. You're driving. Safety is job one. But you still get things like, Pandora, play my Rolling Stones station by talking to the car. And with the GPS, one of the things that's kind of a little thing that bugs me about GPS is the points of interest database is usually so bad. You always end up entering the address. And that means I have to look at it. It's just a pain they have now in the Ford Sync with my Ford Touch 40 million businesses. They're all in there. They've really enhanced the database. Not just directions, but also phone numbers. You press a button, make a call by business name to 40 million businesses in the U.S. You can also, if you're on the desktop or your laptop, you can go to Google Maps, MapQuest. Does anybody still use MapQuest? Google Maps. And you can say, send this address to my car. And so you can plan an elaborate trip with lots of stops. You don't have to enter it in on the car GPS. You just send it to the car from your computer. It's little things like that that just make a huge difference. It connects you to the 21st century. Great vehicles, the great EcoBoost engines, the hybrid engines, the electric vehicle. I think I'm crossing my fingers. I think Scott Monty at Ford just told me that he's going to put me on the early influencers list for the electric Focus. I'm so excited. If you want to try this, though, the 2012 Ford Focus, a great way to take a look at what they've done with Sync and My Ford Touch and all the great Ford technologies. Drive one today at a Ford dealer near you or go to Ford.com/technology and you can see this great website where they've got all this great stuff that they've been working on. Really a cool car company. We're going to see them at CES. They have a big booth. They're going to have the 2012 Focus there. We can show how that works and all that stuff. Ford.com/technology. We're talking about This Week in Google with Gina Trapani, Jeff Jarvis, and joining us, Matt Cutts, who I never really give you the right introduction, but I just figure everybody knows who Matt Cutts is. He is the guy who keeps spam off your search results, among other things.
Yay!
He's fighting the good fight for all of us. Were you involved with SOPA, the fight against SOPA at all?
Just as a personal person who thinks it's a really bad idea.
It was your blog post that brought it to my attention, frankly.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was because of you that I put the censored thing on my website. You know, speaking of censoring, this must drive you crazy. There's the SOPA thing and the IP Protect, we're censoring by modifying DNS, breaking DNS, in effect. A U.S. judge has just ordered hundreds of sites de-indexed from Google. Does that drive you crazy when you get this kind of thing?
Yeah, I'll just speak for myself personally.
You're not speaking for Google.
Yeah, but it does seem a little strange. There was a write-up by Eric Goldman or on Eric Goldman's blog, and they were basically saying, how does this happen? Like, under what authority, what particular law is this taking place? And they also said it has to be removed from Facebook and Twitter. So there's a German website. It was like sopamode.ws. And people are transferring .coms to GoDaddy. And so this is a German registrar, German registered domain. It doesn't even exist in the United States. And so if you're going to mention it on Twitter, Twitter is forced to remove all mentions of it.
Oh, my God.
That's kind of strange.
Is this Nevada judge a nitwit? He's a federal judge in Nevada. It was a luxury goods maker, Chanel, suing hundreds of websites trafficking counterfeit luxury goods. Now, I'm not for counterfeit luxury goods, but is it such a high priority that we not have counterfeit Chanel bags? And
same
and
problem
that
with SOPA.
It's the but judge ordered. Principle. Listen to this. The judge ordered all internet search. This is a quote from his order. All internet search engines and all social media websites, and then explicitly said Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Bing, Yahoo, and Google to de-index the domain names, remove them from any search results. And by the way, the investigation that was involved, Chanel hired a private investigator in Nevada to order from three of the 228 sites. When the orders from three... Not 228, from three. When the orders arrived, they were reviewed by a Chanel official and declared counterfeit. The other 225 sites were seized based on a Chanel anti-counterfeiting specialist browsing the web. They didn't even order a product. And the judge, Kent Dawson, said, that's it. We're going to take the domain names, transfer them to GoDaddy.
Toy.
Yeah.
Where they'd all be read. Thank you, GoDaddy. It's like this guy is like a nitwit, a freaking idiot. And he says they're all going to redirect to a page serving notice of the seizure. Is this due process? 228 sites, three of them were actual products ordered. This guy ought to be disbarred.
It's the same problem with Sopolio, and the problem is, and the same problem I had the discussion with the German politicians today. There's no discussion of the principles that underlie these decisions. They sound okay in the moment, but in SOPA or in this, if the government is in a position to blacklist sites for whatever reason, that's bad. That's a violation of free speech.
And really, there's no due process here. I mean, this was a hearing in Nevada. These guys didn't come to Nevada. It's just Chanel, some guy, Chanel, and the private investigator. Judge, we're losing millions of dollars to fake Chanel bags. Oh, no problem. Let me just get rid of that.
I mean, isn't just taking down the sites enough? If the sites redirect to the seizure notice, then anyone who clicks on the links from Twitter, Facebook, Google+, will go to the seizure notice, right? I mean...
Right.
That's exactly right. And in fact, if you control the domain name, which evidently now they do, you could put up no index meta tags, or you could register it in Google Webmaster Central and remove it there. And so there's no need to go to... any of these other companies, if you actually control the physical domain name. And I have to say, it kind of reminds me a little bit of something we saw a few years ago. Now, I grew up in Kentucky, but a few years ago, the state of Kentucky decided that they didn't like poker websites.
Right.
And what they ended up doing was trying to seize several high-profile poker websites that weren't even based in the United States. So, Full Tilt or Poker Stars or whatever. Simply because gambling in Kentucky... that was not allowed. And so the state of Kentucky said we should be able to remove this content from across the entire web just because we think it should be not allowed in Kentucky. And that leads to a pretty bad decision, pretty quickly, where anybody could say, oh, this part of the web should be illegal, remove it from the entire web. And that's pretty dangerous.
I don't even know how it worked because you're right. I'm looking at Eric Goldman's blog, but it's actually Venkat Balasubramani who's writing the blog post on this. He says, there's no clear basis to authorize a transfer of a defendant's property pending resolution of the lawsuit to the plaintiff, which is what's effectively happened.
It's this big, bad internet thing, Leo. It's ruining the game for everybody.
And this is, in my sense of this is the problem. You've got a Nevada judge who doesn't understand technology, doesn't understand in any way the free speech issues, the search and seizure issues, the Fifth Amendment issue. Doesn't understand any of this for some reason because it's the internet. So his judgment is clouded. He doesn't see it as property. He doesn't see it as requiring due process. And unilaterally orders all of this stuff that is, who needs SOPA? If a judge can do this, you don't need SOPA.
So who's the other side? Who fights that, right?
Well, that's right. It's not going to be this handbag site.
The fight is some stupid handbag.
Well, and by the way, the handbag guy just opens another web page.
Right.
He just opens on 43rd Street instead of 44th Street.
It doesn't stop his business for more than a minute.
Nope.
It breaks the internet, sets all sorts of terrible precedents, and it doesn't stop him for a second.
But you're right, they're idiots. The minister who spoke this morning before me in Germany, the conservative minister, he was asked whether he was online, and he said, yes, I'm on Facebook, and I have a Google.
I have a Google.
I have a Google. And everybody went nuts on Facebook laughing at him, which they should laugh at him, but it really does indicate the kind of lack of basic understanding.
Well, because these guys have a lot of power, they are unafraid to wield it in the face of their stupidity and ignorance. And they have no idea what they've done here. And who is going to fight against this if we don't? Because it's the handbag guy isn't.
Right, but literally, legally in this case, right, the other side is the pirate handbag guy from Nigeria or wherever.
Well, he isn't going to go to the Supreme Court on this.
So how do we fight something like this? I don't know.
Well, it means we're in a really untenable situation. You don't need SOPA. You don't need IP Protect. You just need a moron judge.
Yep.
And there's lots of them.
No offense.
Yes, offense. Fully intended. Fully intended. Moron judge. Let me say the moron judge's name one more time. Judge Kent Dawson of Nevada. You're a moron. You should take yourself off the bench and go get a job at the burger place down the street. You're an idiot. And you shouldn't be given this kind of power. Sorry, go ahead, Gina.
Does Twitter, Facebook, and Google come back and say, we're not going to remove this content?
Ah.
So,
well, what did Google do?
So I asked a little bit about this yesterday, and as of yesterday, as far as I know, no one had actually sent us anything or sent us any information or any court orders or anything along those lines. But it seems to me, and I'm not a lawyer and I'm only speaking for myself personally, but it seems to me that if a court is going to say, Google, you have to remove something, then Google should at least have the ability to address that, defend that, you know, make a case, rather than, you know, if person A sues person B, and then as a result of that, you get to tell Google or Facebook or Twitter what to do. That's kind of strange if Google or Facebook or Twitter aren't allowed to at least make a case. And as I understand it, that didn't happen here. No, I don't know all the details, but that would be kind of strange to say, because of this lawsuit in which you're not involved, some other third party has to do something.
Yeah. Something that kind of undermines their business.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and no one wants counterfeit sites, right? No one wants pirate sites. The whole argument is, for example, when the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, you know, government, when ICE seized like 80 or 130 domains, they had some false positives. They seized, you know, a free DNS provider which actually had thousands of subhosts, and they seized a domain which had been ruled legal in Spain.
Right,
and so, you know, certainly most of the seizures might end up getting counterfeit goods, and that's great for everybody. But if there's going to be collateral damage and false positives, you want that to be subject to some sort of scrutiny or due process.
I guess I'll never go to Nevada now.
Wait, we're going for CES.
Good. You know? Come get me, Kent Dawson. I'll be staying at the Hilton January 6th through 10th.
It's a showdown at the Leo Corral.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe I could be sued for calling somebody a moron or a Nimrod.
That's opinion.
It's a Nimrod law.
It's an opinion. In Nevada, all bets are off. Obviously, this guy thinks he's God.
In that case, Dvorak couldn't go to any state in America.
Yeah. Good. Well, Dvorak believes everyone is a moron, so it's okay.
Exactly.
It's okay. What do you think, Matt Cutts, of this open source search engine?
I love that people are trying different ideas. You really want competition. You want, you know, people to try things like peer-to-peer. Danny Sullivan made a good point that there was a distributed crawler search engine called Grub from 2003.
Oh, I don't remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it got bought eventually. But there's two basic ways people measure search engines. One is to search for your name. You know, you'll search for Leo Laporte or Matt Cutts. And I actually tried this with this search engine yesterday, and there were no results for Matt Cutts. The other way
That's
is to look
not
for
a good
porn.
Sign.
No. The other way is to look for porn. And there was porn.
It's very good at that, probably.
Yeah.
They do say this is just a demo, limited functionality. It's not the, how do you pronounce this, Yassi?
Yassi.
Yassi search portal. So you have to install this on your computer because it is peer-to-peer. You suddenly are beginning to, or you're going to be supporting this by, you'll be a crawler, I guess, on your.
So this
on
is
your,
like BitTorrent or that right. search for extraterrestrial life thing, right? Your computer does the indexing.
And it's never heard of Leo Laporte either.
Right.
By the way, lots of German on this page, Jeff.
Ah, then we love it.
Yeah.
But you can virtually guarantee that the spammers are already installing their nodes and trying to get their pages indexed.
This is a very you're the right guy to ask this about. Yes.
Interesting.
There was someone saying, well, there's no one person reporting who will rank number one. You know, we all get to decide together. And the problem is if you have a majority of spammers who hop into there, well, then you'll get spammed.
They're going to be more aggressive than we ever would be.
Matt, I imagine you in a James Bond movie where you always know what the bad guys are doing.
If you've seen enough bad guys, you can start to predict a little bit. I did wear my eating spam shirt, you know. So
wow, I like that.
But, so I imagine this moment where you say, at last we meet, Mr. Bond.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to pull your spam off. The internet. So you guys did a great video. This is Ben Gomez, a Google fellow. The history of search. I don't have the 6 minutes to play this. But this history of search in 6 minutes, and this is a video everybody should take a look at if you get a chance, because just great stuff. Great stuff. By the way, thank you, chat room. They have given me a number of new ways to address this judge. Airhead, bird brain, blockhead, bonehead, bubblehead, chowderhead, chucklehead, clod, paul, clot, cluck, clunk, cretin, cutty, and when we get down to the bottom, twit. But anyway, I just... I'm sorry, I went off. Look at this. Oh, I got to show you this. The original Google page.
Oh, I have never seen that one.
Look at that.
That is horrendous.
There is a picture somewhere that I was on Google Plus of the original staff, and they had that logo, that super color logo, hanging above. Are you in that picture, Matt? There's about 50.
Probably not.
Yeah,
no,
it was really early.
Yeah. They actually, the logo had an exclamation point at one point, and then they got rid of it.
Yeah, because Yahoo already dibsed the exclamation mark.
But do you know what our very first holiday logo was?
No. The first Google Doodle?
Mm-hmm. It was a Burning Man.
Wow. That shows you how far we've come. Wow. Very cool. So this is a really fun history of Google. Thing to go through. There's Marissa. That's cool. That's cool. Look, she's got some sort of Google trumpet behind her. Google cheerleader horn behind her. Anyway, well worth seeing. We won't show it because it's just too long, but you can find it at Search Engine Land. That's where we saw the original post. I want to talk about Spotify in just a bit. We also have to get tips and so forth. Got a great cast, great people. Gina Trapani, Jeff Jarvis, the lovely Matt Cutts, who's always fun to have on. Reminder, Joe, just briefly, that we are brought to you today, as always, by our friends at Netflix and a great holiday gift. Do you have that Roku, John? Is that around? We were looking at the new Roku. It's so teensy-weensy tiny. Did you get one too, Liz? Liz Lemon? This is the new Roku 2. It is... so tiny. Do you think
cute.
I can't open it. Oh, I can open it. I'll open it. I don't mind if I open it. John won't mind if I open it. Look at this. It's so teensy weensy. It weighs the thing as light as a feather. You put this on your TV. You put the HDMI in there. It's got Wi-Fi where you can connect your Ethernet. And now, suddenly, you've got 10, 20, 100,000 movies available through Netflix. If you've got a PlayStation 3, you don't even need this Xbox 360, your computer, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android phone, all the Android tablets now. Netflix is everywhere you want to watch, and it just streams in, and it's fantastic. I want you to try it free. If you just go to netflix.com/twit, this is the page you'll see. You can start your trial. You need an email and a password. That's it. And see if you like it. If you do, $7.99 a month. If you're not already a member, now... if you're already a member, and I know everybody who's watching this show is, of course, do me a favor. Tell a family member. Tell a friend. Let them know what's out there. And you know what would be great? This would be a great gift. Give them this Roku X2XS and a subscription to Netflix. I just signed up last month for Netflix. Wouldn't that be a great gift?
Yeah.
For the holidays? Netflix.com/twit. Try it today. We did not cover the Spotify announcement today because I was thinking, what could they possibly announce that would be a huge story? And I don't know if it's a huge story, but they've announced a platform. And I find that very interesting. They've announced Spotify apps. Developers can build apps. In fact, I got the new, you have to get the Spotify beta for the Spotify client, but this is the beta. And you go to the app finder, and there's a few apps here now, but there's one that I really like, which I turned on immediately, called TuneWiki. So when you're listening to a song, here we'll put a song on. We'll play Candy Says by the Velvet Underground.
I wasn't getting audio earlier, but...
It's probably turned down. But watch that's fine. We don't need the audio because TuneWiki's great because it's a wiki for lyrics, and it's in sync with the song as it plays. You can read the lyrics. Isn't that cool? And if there's an error, you can edit it. So this is an app. I mean, we're not talking Angry Birds. We're talking things that are, you know, Last FM, Songkick, which is kind of cool. If you're listening to somebody, it'll tell you where they're playing if they have a concert coming up. So that's kind of cool. From this is artists in my library who are going to be touring. Let's show you some of the other ones. So what do you think of this Billboard Top Charts? And it's my understanding they've announced an API so that people can incorporate Spotify into their stuff, which is kind of interesting. It makes you want a Spotify account, doesn't it? I think this is smart.
Do you have to have a paid account, or does this, you can also use the app
for
the free account?
I have a paid account, so I don't know. Does somebody in the chat room, have they tried this for, you could, works for free. Works
no,
for
it
free.
Does work for free. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but as a developer, you can't charge for your apps. All the apps are free.
Oh, that's interesting. I guess that would be right, huh?
Yeah. It's not very interesting for developers.
no money to be made. But if you're the Guardian who has an app, so when I'm listening to a song, I can see if there's a review from Guardian critics on here.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is just another way to channel people in.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, I thought I'd mention it. It's not attracting a lot of attention, so moving on.
I think we're all just so used to everything very being boring... a platform.
Go ahead, Jeff.
The problem, Leo, is I listen to talk podcasts like these instead of music, you see.
Yeah, so this is no help for you.
I don't listen to music anymore because your voice is music to my ears.
Thank you. You know, I just realized this. I should ask Dylan about it. They're going to have to redo the Google Plus commercial, right? Isn't the black toolbar part of it? Maybe not. Let's see.
Oh, just a little bit in that one shot.
Yeah. This is, I thought this was not a great commercial. Matt, you should tell your people. Leo did not. So I tell you why, because it made circling look so much more complicated than it really is. It was like, what? You do what? And then I who? We talked about this last week, I think. We do like some of the circles that show up on this. Wasn't it Epic Bros? That's the one we liked.
I think Matt dropped out as soon as you said, I don't like this commercial. See, he's gone. He's gone as soon as you said
that. I knew there'd be a
that.
Consequence to being so outspoken.
Yeah, I was going to personally hassle Matt about the Epic Bros thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if he heard the
Matt
question.
Matt is an Epic Bro. I do think this is it was a good idea to demonstrate Hangouts. Because that's kind of something that might be intimidating to people a little bit.
Yeah, probably the best part.
They're trying to push Hangouts more. People aren't using Hangouts nearly enough for their taste, and I think even for mine.
Oh, that's interesting. I think Hangouts are great.
They are, but how often, Gina, when was the last time you hung out?
Yeah.
I will admit that I have not used it as much as I thought that I would, but I've had younger friends say that they've lost, you know, someone said to me, I lost my entire summer hanging out on Google Plus.
Really? That's
all I would do all night. So I don't know if it's an age thing. I don't know if I'm just like an old lady and I'm not as social, but.
Some people really dig it. I mean, there's people like, you know, what's the name of the musician? The woman who has been using it to great effect. Some people really love it. There's a new Google Plus ad. It's a love story, which is, I think, a little bit better. They're a little more emotional.
This one is better.
Yeah. So you're not getting any audio from me?
No, I'm not. And I know it's not me on my end.
Okay, let me look and see if I'm doing something wrong. Can you play the commercial?
Yes, I can.
Well, you have
give me
audio.
A link.
Oh.
I don't have a link to that one, but I'll find it.
Yeah. Let me just, we'll pause for a station fixing. I have a new computer and that we haven't used it before on here. Says I'm sending you sound.
I have it turned up. Sorry.
I don't know what's going on. It must just be something without cable. They put a link in the chat room.
So I'm on.
Oh, sorry, not that one.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, that was my video. Sorry.
Oh. That sounded just like Matt Cutts. How you doing, Matt? How's everything going for you?
I can't complain, you know. Epic Bros, Little Brony.
So, Gina, go ahead.
No, I'm not going to hold Matt responsible for the Epic Bros thing. He didn't make the commercial. Come on. I can't do that. Matt's a nice engineer. It's good.
That's
it's okay.
True. You can't blame him.
I won't hassle him about that.
No, you can't blame him for that.
It's cutesy.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people like it, and then some people it rubs you the wrong way a little bit. And
Yeah. Hey, it's just an ad.
Yeah.
It's not your fault. You know why? The ads have been so good up to now. They've been so emotional. And you go, God, I love that ad. And this was the first one out of a bunch. So it's not, that's not bad.
That's a really good point, Leo. The most emotional ad, in a sense, should be Google Plus because it's the most tied to your life.
Right.
And you're right. It's not as emotional as they've made even search.
I love those search ads. I thought they were great.
There was a search ad where it was like someone falling in love and like searching for first date and how to speak French and how to get, getting married, that kind of thing. And then there was the one where the father was writing Gmail messages to his daughter, the Dear Sophie ad. That was really good.
Loved those.
So I was excited to see the Google Plus ad go on during Glee last night because it was like, several of my favorite things happening all at once.
If only there'd been Chipotle somewhere in there.
Right, exactly. If there had been a burrito, it would have been Glee. I like the message of the Google Plus ad, which is like, here's how to share as a grown-up. There's a part where he says, when I was a kid, you just go out at recess and just everybody was there. But now I've got these different, which is the message of circles. It just was a little slow. Like the music is slow and the screenshots are so tight that it's not supposed to be a screencast, but it's so close in that you're not really sure what's going on. But it was heartening for me to see. It didn't surprise me to see Google advertising.
I love it that they're advertising Google Plus. Yeah.
Yeah, because it makes sense now because Google Plus really ties together a lot of the services in a lot of ways now.
It does feel a little bit like Google's struggling with Google Plus. Like it's so close to getting traction.
Well, and what's strange to me is it really feels like if you watch the team, they're moving very, very quickly. Like the things that you complained about when it first launched.
Have all been solved.
Were things like the spam comments or the duplicates, things like that. And that's changed quickly enough that I found myself doing a few things that I've been meaning to blog about forever. Like don't be evil versus do no evil. I'm just like, I'm just going to throw this up as a Google Plus post because it's easier than writing a blog post.
I think the people like, and I would include all four of us, who use Google Plus and get it, love it. It's getting that critical mass jump, which I think you're this close to, and I think the ads might help. You're this close to getting it to the mass market.
But you know what else? There's a positive feedback loop. There's a problem here because I got busy, and so I've been posting to Google Plus less. Mm. And there's no my notifications. I get two, and it's so lonely.
Oh.
And it's the problem of, you come in as a new user and you see cricket, you hear crickets, or you start using it less for a little bit of time, you get less feedback. It's a real need for a positive feedback loop. And if you don't have that, I fear you could fall off the wagon.
That's kind of true, absolutely. And so if you see some of this stuff like what's hot on Google Plus, which is a little thing that sort of gives you a few people you might want to follow and shows you some interesting things.
I do like that
kind of. That helps out quite a bit.
Yeah.
And now my parents are on Google Plus. Like for a while, my mom used a Google Apps account, so she couldn't get on. But that's been solved now. Got my dad on, and so we're actually starting to share photos and things. So it might take a little bit of time, but it's nice to see that the base functionality is there now.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Is your dad your bro?
All right. I think we have.
Is this the ad here?
This is the new one, Matt, right? Let's see.
This is how you teach your gran to use a Chromebook.
Oh.
Grandma? Gran.
Oh, no. This is Chrome. Sorry. I thought you sent this to me.
Wait a minute, though. I'm liking this.
That's cooler. So,
turn the music down, Gran. It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's a good commercial.
So I posted that in the internal doc just because I wanted to say, hey, Google's getting a little bit better about advertising.
That was
like some of the Chrome OS. There's actually a whole line of like how do you upgrade your laptop with Google with Chrome OS and stuff. So you were starting to see a little more clever advertising, which is kind of nice. And there's a lot on Google Plus, but the Chrome OS stuff is pretty good too.
Okay, now I have the ad. Sorry, guys.
We don't mind. This is fun. Love of my life. He just dragged Lisa to the love of my life circle. Now Lisa has just dragged Kyle to her creepers circle. Oh no. Wait a minute. Wrong circle. Book club circle? No, I don't think so. Let's put Kyle somewhere he really belongs. Guys with cars.
That was a little... Otherwise...
ski house? She keeps dragging poor Kyle's head around.
He's getting upgraded.
Maybes. Well, there's two maybes. There's only two. Take him out of maybes and put him into keepers. Aww. The right people in just the right place. That was cute.
It was so cute.
It wasn't immediately clear to me that she was being upgraded over time, but I get it now. Yeah.
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 That's first cute. The book club, and then the ski house, and then anything can happen, Leo.
Started as a creep, ended up the love of my life. There's hope for me yet. Boy, it would be nice if you were so successful that you actually had a competition to get tickets to your developer's event. Holy cow. Google I.O. coming up was originally April 24th and 25th. Remember, last year, they sold out within a minute or something. They've rescheduled now. June 27th through 29th is the developers conference. And apparently the announcement on the Google Code blog says that we might have a test, a coding competition when the application process opens in February to test general programming skills as opposed to product-specific knowledge. We're designing it so every developer is given a fair shot at attending Google I.O., but don't expect it to be as involved as last year's last call for Google I.O. I love this idea.
I love this idea, too. And I love that the blog post was like, don't make your travel arrangements just yet.
You may not have a ticket. How good are you?
So great.
Do you have any insight into this? Should I study my Python, Matt? What's?
I don't have any special insight, but yeah, I'm going to start brushing up on my const and, you know, dynamic classes and all that stuff.
I'm getting my GWT book in the mail. Wouldn't that's just great. I love it.
It's Studio 54 for geeks.
Yeah, there's instead of a red rope, you've got the code bar.
When I fail the test, I'm going to be trying for a press pass.
What if they test press?
I think press should be tested.
Yeah. Yeah, press know nothing.
Spelling test.
We actually do that to get into journalism school.
Really?
Oh, yeah, we give a test.
What's the test?
Current events and basic editing and style.
I am a fan of meritocracy. I don't think meritocracy is a bad thing, and I think it's Google's the ultimate meritocracy, right? You. It's hard to get a job. Well, it wasn't when you started, but it's hard to get a job. No, Matt has said that himself.
Matt has said make it through the front door now. Never.
Yeah. Which shows you that maybe it shouldn't be too hard, because if you got a great guy like Matt, and he couldn't get through the tests, maybe you shouldn't make it so hard. Think of all the Matt cuts out there who don't have jobs at Google. I remember Colleen going through hundreds of interviews, it seemed like. Hundreds. YouTube, big month. For the first time ever, they got 20 billion video views in 1 month. Half of all videos watched in the U.S., according to ComScore, were on Google sites. Pretty impressive.
This is insane.
Google YouTube also had the highest engagement. Users averaged more than 7 hours of video during the month.
Incredible, isn't it?
It's just a matter of time before TV and YouTube flip.
Yep.
Definitely. It's true.
It's close. 7 hours. Probably TV is like 7 hours a night, though, unfortunately.
I think it is.
You got to beef it up a little bit.
There's lots of potential.
Yeah, lots of potential.
Yes, there's purposeful viewing and there's background viewing.
And most TV viewing is just noise in the background. I've watched so many people. It's just the TV's on and it's on all day. Nobody sits down on a couch and watches TV for 7 hours. Your butt would get numb.
Regis and Kelly.
They do?
I do like watching Kelly.
Oh, I love Kelly.
Kelly is wonderful, isn't she?
They asked me to go be on the show next in 2 weeks, but I've just gotten back from France, so I said no.
Oh, they want you back.
I got to start the rumor here, Leo, is you're going to replace Regis.
No. I know who, you know, I was just talking with somebody who's a big fan of the show about who they should get, and we went through a lot of candidates. You know, Michael Bublé will be the guest host when I would have been there, but I think they're going to get somebody like Matthew Broderick. It's got to be somebody who lives in New York, somebody who doesn't work in much. But she has to be, see now, why are we talking about this? I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Cloud? Basically, can we find the cloud angle? Kelly, cloud, it's alliterative?
Basically, this is the journalist test that Leo passed. Give him a subject, he'll talk about it for 10 minutes. It doesn't matter what it is. I could vamp for 10 minutes. So All Things D did a funny little retrospective.
This is a good piece.
It is.
This is a really good piece.
Great Liz Gaines. I love Liz Gaines. Oh, this is nice. Look at this. Now, Wall Street Journal and Rupert Murdoch have been banging on people for cookies, right? The privacy violation. The first time I've ever gone All Things D on this computer, and I'm getting a big yellow thing. Some of the advertisers and web analytics firms used on this site may place tracking cookies on your computer. We're telling you about them right up front.
And the Wall Street Journal, the person who has to write about privacy stuff had to write the story that said basically that Wall Street Journal is now tying your personally identifiable information to your browsing history, whoops, and you can't do anything about it.
Whoops.
Meanwhile, the New York Times editorialized in favor of Do Not Track, and I went on and did a blog post about all the ways in which they insist you use cookies, and if you don't use cookies, you may not use the New York Times. But anyway, Leo, you were saying.
The hypocrisy! So meanwhile, maybe we should make this the apologies of Rupert Murdoch, but it's the apologies of Zuckerberg, a retrospective of the 25 posts Zuck has posted on the corporate blog in the last 5 years. 10 were written to address complaints. And so Liz, who is hysterical, has got a bunch of them together. Here's one she calls a real gem from 2006. This was his first company blog post. It was a pre-apology. Warning users of upcoming changes they might not like. When we've made changes in the past, a lot of people have gotten upset and emailed us asking to change the site back. Change can be disorienting, but we do it because we're sure it makes the site better. So calm down. He actually wrote, calm down, breathe, we hear you. I'm sure that Dylan was
patronizing.
Yeah, really. It's okay. It's going to be okay. But, you know, I have to say, you know, when you make a big change like the Google toolbar, you know you're going to get probably tens of thousands of complaints.
Google's going to get serious blowback from that. But that's just the reality of, like, making a popular web product.
You can't change
anything.
Yeah.
Redesigns at Lifehacker were a nightmare, but it's just that people react to change badly initially.
Right.
Right. And I'll defend Zuck to this extent that he does back off, but he just throws things out there and then really listens to his public. The argument is he listens too late. He doesn't do it as a beta. He does it as a product release, and that puts him in a less good PR position. But, you know, what are you going to do? Throw stuff out there. See how it sticks.
Right. He doesn't ask for permission. He asks for forgiveness, right?
Exactly. And I don't think that's a bad strategy.
No, I don't either.
It's a bad strategy either.
And then, but you, the viewers and listeners at home and all of us have to decide, well, do we want to play in this game? Unfortunately, it's hard not to play in Facebook's game. You can't, for instance, have a Spotify account if you don't have a Facebook account. They've made it very difficult not to play, and that's what really frustrates me. It's not like you have a choice.
But you can now do a turntable if you have a Twitter account. You don't have to use Facebook anymore.
Ah, turntable.fm?
Mm-hmm.
Hallelujah. Thank you. They listened. Can we make it an OpenID or browser ID or something that we don't have to have an account?
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
It would be nice. If OpenID was easier for people to understand. But, yeah, I agree.
I agree. We all agree. Let's take a break. Let's not take a break. Let's go right to Gina's tip. We have a tip from Matt. Thank you, Matt Cutts. And Jeff's number of the week. And if there's time, I'll do a tool. Let's start with you, Gina.
Oh, actually, you know, so this was a story that we passed, but I think it's a really cool story, so I'll just make it my tip.
Good.
Google Maps, and I believe this is just for Android right now, or it's on the web as well, now indexes indoors of public spaces.
Isn't that wild?
It's so crazy. So, like, malls and airports and that kind of thing, you can and I just watched the demo video. I haven't actually tried it yet. I'm not sure if it's rolled out just yet. But so you can see where shops are and bathrooms and exits and in public places. And you can move up and down floors. That was the bit that just blew my mind. It's like, what's on the fourth floor of the Manhattan Mall? That kind of thing. So really, really cool.
Now, just to lay aside any privacy concerns that I know Germany just going crazy right now. They go to the mall or the businesses and they say, hey, can, you know, the O'Hare Airport, they say, will you let us map the inside? And so it's not like they don't have a street view Kia, you know, little, I don't know if it was a joke or if they're serious, a little street view thing on wheels that you could go into the shops. That would be cool.
I want them to come into my house and show me where my car keys are.
Yeah, these are public spaces. These are big
public
spaces.
And with the cooperation of the big public space.
Right. So when you're in some airport you've never been in and you need to find the Chipotle, this would be a help.
Right now it's only 25 spots, San Francisco International, O'Hare, Macy's, Bloomingdale's. But I would hope they would do more of these. I think this is a great idea. Yeah,
and I was saying, actually, Tim O'Reilly did a piece on Google Plus actually saying that this is kind of an interesting, you know, that Google generally doesn't build products for revenue streams, but this has a lot of revenue potential.
You could show a special inside that store.
Right. But I mean, it's also useful to the user. And this was my real tip was going to be, or my secondary tip. I had to get that story in because I thought that was interesting.
It's good.
Google Calendar, there's a new Labs. This is nice. If you go into Google Calendar settings, go to Labs, there's a hide morning and night option now. So I use Google Calendar constantly in the web interface, and I'm always like scrolling through the middle of the night. I never schedule anything, but, you know, I'm a night owl, but I still don't schedule meetings between, you know, midnight and 4 a.m. So if you enable this Labs feature, you can collapse late, you know, middle of the night times. So you get more screen real estate, and you don't have to scroll through that time when you're probably not scheduling meetings. So yeah, that was a cool little Google Calendar tip.
Perfect.
Now I want that on my Android phone because I'm constantly scrolling through.
Yes. Now Matt's going to show us how to explore the tool belt.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the Google bar, which is up in the top left, and how it's got a drop down menu.
Yeah.
But you might not have explored the tool belt, which is if you do a search like Republican debate and you look over on the left hand side, there's all kinds of really useful tools.
Yes.
So imagine, what if you wanted videos? If you clicked on the videos tab, you might get the Fox News Google debate, which was, you know, 113 minutes, but the number two result might be from Saturday Night Live.
Right.
Well, there's all these great little things. If you click on long under any duration, then you'll only get the long videos.
20 minutes plus. That's neat.
Yeah. And so it's just this fun thing where even on images mode, you can click on images and you can look for things with a dominant color. You can look for large and small sizes. You can click to see faces and photos. So if you haven't done those sorts of things where you can kind of do a little bit of exploring and see what great tools are hidden under the tool belt, even on the main web search, you can slice and dice by date range. So you can say, show me the Republican debates, but show me web pages from 2002 to 2006.
Mm.
So just lots of ways to slice and dice are just sitting right there a few pixels over if you just want to take a little bit of time to explore on the tool belt.
It's funny because I think we're creatures of habit. So we look at the search. We do a search. We look at the top result. We go there. It must drive you crazy because this tool belt is fantastic. And I bet you most people, it's not as if it doesn't exist. They just go, I got it. And they go, and it really is very, very, very useful, especially in the image search. You can really narrow it down.
Yeah. We like to joke that if we could spend 5 minutes with each searcher, we could really make them much more efficient. Right. But no one wants to take 5 minutes to learn how to search.
And this is why speed is so important. You know, click, 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 and I'm there. And you do that very well. But, yeah, I'm glad we could mention that because you're absolutely right. I use it. I guess probably it was you who raised my awareness, but certainly during the show, and I use it a lot now. To narrow down results. Thank you, Matt Cutts.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
The number of the week is 2, which is the number of days it took Kansas Governor and former Senator Brownback to back off trying to muscle an 18-year-old girl named Emma Sullivan into apologizing for a negative tweet on him. And she, God bless her, refused to do it.
Good, right
and
on.
And he learned a lesson about the First Friggin' Amendment, Governor.
Taught it by an 18-year-old high school student who had a lot of guts. Good on you, Emma Sullivan.
God bless her. And it shows how, you know, we'll make it into a cloud by a big stretch here. But the cloud made her powerful. The cloud brought her the support of Twitter and made her say, F you, Gov.
Yep. She said he sucked.
And a hashtag. It was like a lot of hashtags.
Hashtag was pound he blows a lot. Suck, blow, you know. I love that. But I also think that Sam Brownback wins the Weasel of the Award of the Year because his apology said, my staff overreacted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's like, when, you know, that piece about Zuckerberg's apology is that he never really apologized. He never says that he did anything wrong. He's sorry that you perceived it.
Yes. It's your perception.
Yeah, sorry about your perception.
Yeah. Sorry you didn't think I was wonderful.
Lessons in how to distance oneself.
It's a great apology that always begins, I'm sorry if.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
They his office contacted school administrators.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
they were really trying to pressure her, and she and her family, good for her family, her sister became her press spokesman.
Good.
And they pushed back, and God bless them for doing so. This is the future of politics, you dorks.
Just horrible. Then the school district backpedaled, too. It was our staff's fault.
Hmm. Well, so, you see social media where someone was saying Mitt Romney took a flight up, you know, from Florida to somewhere, and whoever he was sitting next to wrote a blog post about how he wasn't very friendly on the plane. But, you know, it's sort of like you're always on the record with social media the way that it is.
Yeah, it's true. Well, you know what this story is? She said, I posted this tweet to my friends. I had a few dozen followers of my friends, and I posted this tweet. It was kind of this in-joke that we had because I saw that a reporter asked her if you were having a face-to-face conversation with the governor, is this the language that you would have used? And she said, no, but I wasn't talking to him.
Yeah, I was talking to my friends.
I was talking to my friends, and his staff just happened to hear it, which is interesting if you think about it.
Yeah. Well, that's something, maybe a lesson for her is that Twitter is public.
Right. Well, Yeah. So there's a few layers of issues here.
But you know what? She has the right to say that, just like I have the right to call that Nevada judge a Nimrod.
What is he, Leo?
He's a moron. He's a twit.
What is he, Leo?
Don't egg me on. My tool of the week is actually maybe I might have to backpedal. Let me ask you, Matt Cutts,
perhaps a Nevada judge?
Yes, he's a tool of the week. There you go.
There you go.
I like it. Our tool of the week. But I want to ask Matt, do you have the Galaxy Nexus in your hands there?
So I've been testing ice cream sandwich on a Nexus S because they need bug reports on that. And so that works very nicely. Looking forward to that rolling out. But I super am excited about trying to get the Galaxy Nexus. So
when will we see ice cream sandwich on older phones?
Well, I mean, they have released the source code.
Yeah,
at this
it's up to the carriers, right? Manufacturers.
Yeah. I think Cyanogen, there's already at least CM9. So people are starting to get that out there. But I think it won't be too long before it's released for the Nexus CM9. S. I don't know the timeline. Yeah. But
good. Well, I have a Galaxy S2, which I love. But I don't know if that's, you know, that's got to get Samsung and Sprint to do it and blah, blah, blah. So that's why I went to Expansys, which is a British website, and ordered my unlocked GSM Galaxy Nexus. They're back ordered. Actually, now I see now it says in stock shipping today. So I was hoping I would get it by today. I hope I'll get it by the time I leave because I want this badly. This will not be 4G compatible. It will not be a Verizon phone. I'll have to put it on T-Mobile.
Right.
But that's okay.
When are you going to Paris, Leo?
Leaving Monday. So I won't be here next week. Who's doing the show next week?
Tom
Merritt will be here next week. And you know what? I'm going to say hi to that Sarkozy fella, just for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Monsieur le Président.
Monsieur le Président. Mon ami Jeff Jarvis says, you blows a lot.
In a hashtag.
The hashtag.
I'm not so sure about the First Amendment in France. I'll be careful when I get there. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. Thank you, Gina Trapani. And thank you, Matt Cutts, for being here. It's always great to have you on the show. We just really appreciate you taking the time to join us. Also to Dylan Casey of Google, I'm sure it's a little gutsy to come on this show and defend something new.
He was great.
And we really appreciate him doing that. I will not be here next week, but Tom Merritt will. We do the show Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Let's see, that'd be 1 p.m. is 1300 plus 9, 2200 UTC on twit.tv. If you want to watch live, you can always get the show after the fact at twit.tv. We do audio and video versions for your delectation. Do subscribe. That way we can count you, and when you subscribe, that way you never, ever miss a show. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org. Don't forget to read her blog. Jeff Jarvis at buzzmachine.com. And Matt Cutts' blog is mattcutts.com. Should give you credit, too. But if you want to support him for his macho man mustache, bit.ly/twigmatt.
And good for you, Matt.
Yeah, thank for
you.
His Movember.
And finally, I can get this off me.
Yeah, Matt, it's really scary.
You got 10 hours.
I'm glad I lost the video because you were freaking out.
No, I like it. I like it.
I don't know.
You know, his...
Fu Manchu.
His Skype image, he's bald. So it just goes all over, you know? It's just you never know what you're going
to
get.
To your wife, Matt.
Yes, she's a patient.
I lose a lot of bets, but she's very patient.
Thanks for being here, everybody. We'll see you next time on Twig.